See, I have one son who is is a chemist. He's a lawyer. His work now is all dealing with inventions in science. In fact, the AIC is going to put out a new paper, and it's sons and fathers and sons in chemistry, and he and I are the first candidates. But you see, even seeing my son as a lawyer, we discuss a lot of things. He has a business. We built a plant. Another thing is I was in water purification.
All right, that was after you left Olin.
That was my son's business.
Okay.
We formed a company.
World Water Resources and
World Water Resources is the company. And our son has traveled literally around the world putting in systems for sterilization of water. He is one of the best traveled men in the company because he is. It never took off. It has never really taken off. He still makes them, but it didn't take off. We couldn't gel it right. And it's still a big business. I was just reading, I guess it was the other day, where the biggest supply of fresh water is in the world. It's the Great Lakes. And now it's being contaminated. And strangely enough, what's contaminated is mercury. Maybe it's not in the world, but it's certainly one of the biggest fresh water places we have. And to contaminate that is a crime. But how are you going to purify it? The best way is never let the water you've used back into it that's not pure. And that was the type of thing we were looking at. And he looked there. He's been in the... Oh, hell. He got more pictures of colored guys in short pants and nothing but a jap strap on. But that one didn't hit. We couldn't gel it. Well, the other thing is we couldn't raise enough money. It takes, and don't underestimate in anything like this you do, the importance of the money man, the John Olins, the M.W. Kellogg, Mr. Kellogg, Dorrance. You know who Dorrance is? You know the name of the attorney?
No.
He invented the business, biggest business in the world. Most makes the most money. He's the starter of Camel Soup.
Oh, all right, sure. Philadelphia, the family.
Philadelphia.
Sure, Camden.
And John Olin, Lawrence, came from Bristol, too.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, he lived within two blocks of my grandfather. And he went to France as a young man and learned to cook. And when he came back, he started the Camel Soup business. And he must have been awful good, because he must have had that virtue. Now, the ones that are really good, not me, is means like Dorrance, who could take an idea like cooking, learn to cook it, and then learn how to package it and put it through. Somehow he learned the importance of building a team, and he built a team. The Coke bottle is another example.
Mm-hmm.
And those are simple things, and yet who would ever thought that I'd package Coke in polyethylene? And we used to sit around the drugstore when I was a young kid. One of my jobs as a young man, my uncle ran a drugstore. In those days, the drugstore had a soda fountain. And in the soda fountain, you had to have soda. And so in the basement of my uncle's drugstore, they had a big high-pressure cylinder. Not big, maybe 50 gallons, no, about 25 gallons. And that sat on a rocker. And alongside of that, he had a tank of carbon dioxide. And every once in a while, Unc would say, "We haven't got enough soda water. Go down and get started." And I said, "No." He said, "I'll come down and hook you up." And he would come down and fill the tank with water out of the spigot. And then he would connect the CO2, let out the air and connect it. And now he'd say, "Sit there and rock." And I'd sit there and rock it. And you know, it's things like that, how impression they are. I say I've got a new idea, which I have. But the idea comes back to rocking. I think I know what happened in that good experiment. But I was too impatient. Because one of the things you learn from nature is that nature takes time. And if you look up in the Mining Engineer book by Sloan, which I've read 3 times, you find 2 things that he tells you. The first thing is that clathrates can take a century to make under lots of conditions. Just think of that. You can make it in a few minutes, or you take a long time. The difference is agitation, water conditions. If you don't shake it enough, and it isn't putting a great high-speed stir in it, it's just mixing. The other thing is that nature had to find some way to keep it. Nature, you and I make plenty of it. I get rid of a lot of it every day. But you have to keep it. How did nature decide to keep it? They decided to set it with water. And when they get a leak in a field down in the earth, if he didn't have some way to pluck it, it wouldn't be there long. But nature says, "I'll fix that." And they said, he said, I'll make a clathrate. And the clathrate is the methane comes up with the water. It drops at velocity. The temperature drops a few degrees, and it freezes. And all of the methane you got in the world is there because nature is able to make a clathrate when a rupture occurs. Have an earthquake, you can blow the damn world up, but nature has a way to plug it up. And the question is, how do we use it? And the question with this field right now is this. There has been oodles and oodles of dollars of how to get the methane out of the clathrate. But there is no good method of making a clathrate in a tank. And that's the question. Can I do it? Mm-hmm. And what we don't use enough is to think in terms of how does nature solve the problem? And then how can I use that same thing to solve the problem? And the best example of that was Crothers nylon. He wanted a polyamide. he knew that they would be good. And all he did is very simple. He put 5 carbon atoms between the carboxyl and the NH2 group. Took acid, amino acid, stretched them apart, because his theory was simple. If I get them far enough apart, I won't form a ring. And that's what he did. Mm-hmm. That's the total concept that led the nylon. The total concept. Now, I have a man, worked for me, who made the 5-member ring polymerize. That's Carl Barnes. I told him he couldn't do it. But Carl Barnes worked for me at GAF. We worked in acetylene. One of the things we tried to do was acetylate everything. Barnes decided to acetylate glycine, ethyl glycinate. He wanted to acetylate him. In GAF, he had to wait in line to get a position to get at the acetylene to do his experiments. Mm. In fact, most of us thought so poorly of him, he was last in the line. But he didn't care. He did it. And then one day he decided that if he got in line quick, he got the product he wanted. But if he had to wait a week, he didn't get that. He got a polymer. And that polymer, he spent, I would guess, 15 years to get him where he could point, where he could take an amino acid and polymerize it to a high molecular weight polymer and with enough stability that he could melt spin it. Where he was unfortunate, and this is where timing comes in, he was unfortunate. He was just about 20 years too late, because man had circumvented that problem by the nylon problem instead of going from the amino acid. If he'd have run his experiment prior to Carruthers, nylon may never come about.
That's interesting.
Huh?
That's interesting.
That's right. That's true. And he calls me up now. He's still... he is one of the early inventors in telephotography. He was a photographer as an amateur. He's a graduate chemist from Harvard University. And he got into photography. And he got into color photography. And he was the IG color photography man in this country, long before Eastman Kodak was in the picture. And that's how I met him. I met him because he was in color photography at ANSCO. And he was interested in polymers, and I was interested in polymers. We were interested in acetylene. And I was at GAF, I supported his work. He later got some of the other people supported, but it was too slow. And you see, again, going back to Carruthers and them, one of the things that, if Carruthers had been left alone, nylon would have been a secondary product. Why? Because he would have to spun it from solution. And the only thing that will dissolve it is Creosol. But there was a chemical engineer on that steering committee. His name was Crawford Greenwald. And Crawford Greenwald says, as long as I'm on this committee, we will never commercialize that project until you can melt spin it. And Carruthers says it's impossible. It was another man, Peterson, that added the key, which was nothing but a few percent of acetic acid, that made that polymer spin. I don't know what they're using today, what the hell they're doing today, but that was the original one. And when you did that, you could melt it, you could spin it, you could draw it. Now the other guy that was important was the guy that invented cold drawing. Julian Hill.
Oh, yes, sure.
Julian Hill.
Sure.
Hey, Julian Hill was working on polyesters with Crothers. And one day he did this, just this way. And he had enough imagination to know that when he did this, it necked down, and in necking down, he put it in the tensometer, and the strength was 10 times as strong. But not useful, because the polyesters melted too long. Then that didn't come for a long time, between the polyester to the polyamide. Now, Crothers was involved in the chloroprene work in his early days. But when that finished, you see, Crothers did a job of research, but Crothers was not competent to develop it. Had to go to Jackson Lab, to the rubber people. And then Crothers moved over into the polyester, and from the polyester to the polyamide, and Julian Hill led the way. And you see, there's so many people. There's another thing. You could make hexamethylene diamine today if you had to. If you say, well, hell, the obvious way to do that is to make a tiponitrile and put a lot of ammonia and then hydrogenate it with nickel. It don't work. You know why? It ring forms. And you get hexamine. It wasn't until Hauck and Lazier decided to switch from nickel to cobalt that the yield went from maybe 10% to 99%. Those are the things that make it. See, Crothers wanted to make the 10 polymer, 10-10, for two reasons. One, it was easier to make. Two, it was easier to spin because it was lower melting. And he couldn't melt spin it because he didn't have to get it so high. But DuPont says, no, no, we don't want that. And then it went to the 6-6. And it wasn't until Hauck and Lazier, and when one of the fellows, name I forgot, switched to cobalt. Just think, that was the only change. The hydrogen was the same, the diamine, the dinitrile was the same, the ammonia was the same, but he switched to cobalt. And they made, what do you call a cobalt when you dissolve, rainy cobalt.
Okay.
Instead of rainy nickel.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, sir.
Oh.
I don't know whether I've...
You have. It's been very good.
Now, any specific questions, I'll try to answer.
Well, I did have one other question. You said DuPont. You didn't get anything for the DuPont patents, but what about the other places you worked? Did they reward you more for patents?
No.
It was the same all the way
through? All the way along. I never made any money, essential money. Well, I guess I never made any money out of patents. Because once I left DuPont, my job was, I was management. And my job was to make sure that the guy that run the experiments got the patents. And I was not interested, truly and truly, that I should get the patent. Because the idea alone is not enough. It takes experimental skill. The thing that I can't convince so many people is, I used to have when I was in the laboratory, I had an assistant. We call him lab assistant. His name was Tommy Simpers. When Tommy Simpers came to the DuPont company, he couldn't read nor write. Hmm. He was the best assistant anybody ever had. Because he did learn to read, he did learn to do, and he learned a lot of stuff. He was a man that looks like Agassi now looks when he plays tennis, a bum. I don't go with that kind of tennis player. But anyhow, that was him. But he, before I got him, he had worked for a guy by the name of Brubaker, and Brubaker told him. When he worked for me, I would say, Tommy, do this. Put 50 cc's of that and 20 cc's of this. Put it on a thing and heat it to 80 degrees. And he hated the 80 degrees. It wasn't 90 degrees. It wasn't up and back and all. He did what he was told. And the trouble today with too much experimental work is they don't have the patience to do it. And I told you, I missed one too. See, I missed the cath rate. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the patience to think that that thing, nature form, wouldn't form like that. And then when I got to read the mining engineering work and found that they said that it can take anywhere from a few minutes to a century to make a cath rate, I knew I had missed the boat. See, but that, again, is the reason that the team is so important. Okay.
We've pretty well covered this list of questions. Let me ask you this. What effect, how did you feel when you, how do you feel about what the future holds for chemical research and development?
How did we what?
What do you think is the future for chemical research and development in this country? Do you think it's as vital as it was when you were involved?
Probably more so, because of this. We have more reason to get rid of stuff. We've got to find some way that when my wife, when the maid turns that water on and gets a lot of stuff in it, it don't go back in the sewer contaminated. And it's even worse with that toilet. When that toilet flushes, you've got to find some way to recycle that water. And where detergents, synthetic detergents come in, is they have to be biodegradable. Because if they're biodegradable, then nature will clean them up, provided we put them in the right environment. So I think that's just as important as ever. Because the human body is such a way we live that it's got to be kept clean, and the clothes got to be kept clean, and the dishes got to get clean. Now, of course, there's another area that's been very important in which I got involved in too, and that's the non-foaming. You've got a dishwasher in the kitchen there. I built my first house when I was first married, and that was in 19. When was I married? I'd been married 50 or some 60 years or something, but anyhow, and I decided that I would build a house. My wife wanted a house. She didn't want an apartment, and she wanted to build it. My brother was a builder. And again, going back to the things getting done, I had an uncle, an aunt that was interested in building. So she supported my brother in his building trade. When I wanted a house, my brother built it. My aunt put in the money. I was a good enough risk for her to take it. Well, anyhow, the story is this. When it was built, I wanted a modern kitchen. And I wanted the dishwasher in it. My brother says, that's a waste of money. Nobody uses those damn things. You can't use them. They're no good. I put them in a lot of houses. They don't work. The range says, it doesn't make any difference. We want one. We built it. We put a dishwasher in it. And when I was at DuPont, and even at Olin, I did a hell, at GAF, I did a hell of a lot of dishwashing in my dishwasher to test out on its foaming characteristics. Because that's the secret. Nothing, no trouble to get something to wash. The question is how to get it so it will release the fat and put it in this emulsion somehow, or whatever you want to call it, and not contaminate the water. And no, when I open the door, there's no foam. So that, as far as I'm concerned, yes, that's going to be a important thing as long as... I don't think we'll quite get to the point where we'll have shirts to throw away.
Okay.
But it's getting close to it now. So I think that that's still an important field. Of course, the source of the hydrocarbon and all of those things are still have to be balanced. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think at that point I'm going to thank you very much for spending the morning with me. And I don't have any more questions. If there's anything you'd like to add.
You know, you do raise one question on there which bothered me. And that was, what did the Perkins Medal, how did it influence me? Well, I think the fact that it was available influenced me. Not that I won it would influence me, but that my friends won it. And therefore it was a goal. How can I win it? And I think in that respect, don't lose sight of the importance of giving the MVP, the most valuable player. But on the other hand, don't lose sight of that you got to have the other team members. And today I think we are putting too much money on emphasizing the MVPs and not the guards and those people, because they know. And I end up by telling your story. I got lots of stories. We moved here. And over the years, the world's been very good to me. I've never been paid for patents. I never got any royalty on a patent. I have been paid, at times, some pretty good salaries. I have been in companies in which I was the highest paid man. Then, what I've been paid as my highest man, you couldn't hire a PhD for today. But that's all right. I lived in the day. But anyway, I'll tell you this story. I went to work for DuPont. And when I went to work, the salary was $215 a month.